So I'm going to call to order the committee meeting. This is Senate Committee on General Government and Accountability for February 6th, and welcome everybody. We've got a few things to do today. Do you want to give us a rundown of what we've got today and tell us what's first?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, today's agenda is a public hearing on Senate Bill 106 and public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bills 12 and 86, the fingerprinting bills. We also will post work sessions for possible introduction of measures up until the introduction deadline, which is February the 28th. If the chair is inclined to go in agenda order.
Yes.
We have a witness sheet with a couple of panels of three each to start out.
Okay. So, Emily Matasar, Michael Krohn, and Steve Elzinga. Great. If I didn't get pronounce the names right, I'm sorry, but I do the best I can.
And did you want me to summarize the measure, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
Senate Bill 106 establishes a public records advocate appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate to mediate between seekers and holders of public records within 21 days of the written request of either party. It authorizes the advocate to make determinations about either party's good faith participation in mediation and provides remedies for failures of same. It requires the advocate to memorialize agreements in writing for the parties to execute or to issue an advisory opinion when parties fail to agree. It exempts materials exchanged between parties and materials submitted to or prepared by the advocate from disclosure, except the written agreement or the advisory opinion. Requires the Department of Administrative Services to provide office support and directs the preceding duties are operative January 1st, 2018. It authorizes the advocate to review denials of access to records of public bodies that are not state agencies in the place of the Attorney General in counties with populations less than 75,000 where the public body is located. It creates also a public records advisory council to study and make recommendations concerning the advocate's role and practices, procedures, exemptions, and fees related to public records. It permits the council to adopt rules governing the advocate and requires a report to the governor and the legislature by December 1st of even-numbered years at a minimum. Directs monies to be appropriated from the general fund and takes effect the 91st day after signing die.
So you've all done this before, so don't forget to put your name on a record. Who wants to go first?
I will, if that's
continue.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair DeBoer, and members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. My name is Emily Matasar, and I'm the government accountability attorney in the governor's office. As you know, one of Governor Brown's leading priorities is improving state government accountability and transparency. Governor Brown believes in a state government that is open, accessible, and accountable to its people. In the 2 years that she has been in office, Governor Brown has taken a number of executive and administrative actions to improve the state's public records system. Most recently, the state has made significant progress in the efficiency and fairness of administering public records law. In January 2016, through Executive Order Number 1606, the governor directed DAS to work with the governor's office to implement recommendations from the Secretary of State's 2015 audit. As a result, every single state agency has adopted a public records policy compliant with the state archivist's model policy. And just this week, DAS will implement a statewide standardized fee structure to help standardize both the grant of fee waivers and the cost of requests. But the reality is there is still much more we can do. Governor Brown believes there are many improvements that can still be made at both the state and local levels. Senate Bill 106 would be a significant step toward making such improvements. Senate Bill 106 creates the Office of the Public Records Advocate, whose core mission is to improve the way public bodies respond to public records requests. The advocate will serve government bodies, requesters, and the public at large by 1, providing education and training on topics related to public records, 2, mediating disputes between public bodies and requesters on the most common public records disagreements, such as the scope of the request, denials of fee waivers, and costs to produce, and 3, providing guidance and advice on public records topics by issuing advisory opinions. Senate Bill 106 also creates the Public Records Advisory Council, which will meet regularly to discuss public records practices and procedures and will make recommendations to the governor and the Legislative Assembly. The governor is passionate about Senate Bill 106, and we are still fine-tuning the bill with various stakeholders, including those who came to speak today. We want to ensure that this is a value add to the state's public records process and not an impediment. That means the input of stakeholders and the public is essential to developing a meaningful position. The governor believes that the Public Records Advocate and Public Records Advisory Council represent another step towards improving administration of the public records law and ultimately toward guaranteeing an open, accessible, and accountable government. Thank you.
Be happy to go next. Dear Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair DeBoer, members of the committee, I'm Michael Crone. I am special counsel to Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum. I don't have prepared remarks exactly, but I have lived and breathed public records law and public records requests since about 2008. And I am also with the Attorney General chairing a public records law reform task force that has been meeting for more than a year now. And I will tell you that the public records advocate as a concept is one that we believe can actually add a lot of value. One of the things that I have done in my time with the public records law quite a bit is go out and do agency trainings. And one of the things I'm trying to explain to agencies a lot of the time is that people who make public records requests, they don't know what records you have. They don't know how you keep your records, and they don't really necessarily know what the laws are that govern the disclosure of your information. And I think that, you know, there's all, at the same time, there are problems on the other side where people who are requesting public records have maybe for reason and maybe without good reason have some level of distrust for the government entity that they're seeking records from. And having access to a truly independent person who can take a look at a request and talk to both sides just honestly and openly about, is this request too broad? Is it too much work? Or is the agency or, you know, the public body that received the request throwing up walls that are unnecessary or not supported by law? I think having access to that kind of function could actually be immensely useful to both sides, frankly. And I would say that all of the members of the task force were very supportive of the concept of a public records advocate. As Ms. Matizar mentioned, the governor's office has been expressed a lot of willingness to work with stakeholders on fine-tuning the details. I think that's important, I definitely appreciate that from the governor's office. But the idea of an advocate, I really do believe, would add significantly to the state's public records law.
Steve? Good afternoon, Chair Riley, Vice Chair DeBoer, members of the committee. My name is Steve Elzinga, and I'm the Governmental and Legal Affairs Director for Secretary of State Dennis Richardson. And Secretary Richardson is very supportive of increasing transparency, accountability, and efficiency in Oregon government through creation of a public records advocate to work with government entities and the public to clarify misunderstandings and target requests. For a public records advocate to be successful, it is critical that they coordinate closely with the existing public records work being done by the State Archives Division. It is also important that the public records advocate both be actually independent and perceived as independent by both public and governmental entities. We appreciate the governor's willingness to work with us and other parties to find ways to improve Senate Bill 106, and we look forward to participating with the governor's office and the attorney general and other stakeholders in further discussions to find the best solution for all Oregonians. Thank you.
Great. Questions to this panel? Senator Brzezinski.
Thank you. So I'm not sure who, but where's this advocate going to be housed, and where do we see them being accessible to the public? And are we talking about a new name, advocate versus ombudsman? Can you give me some perspective on those?
So as currently drafted in the Senate Bill 106, it is housed in DAS, the Department of Administrative Services. However, we are open to housing it elsewhere. We've been in talks with the Secretary of State's office. Ideally, it would be its own independent agency, but that didn't seem realistic. So we're open to where to house it.
Okay. And is it just a fancy term we're now using, advocate versus ombudsman?
Thanks for the question. I think ombudsman presents some difficulty pronouncing. So yes, I think it's
Mr. Chair, I can see another bill that we're going to be changing all the ombudsman.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have to say the word. Steve, I know you had something to say about where it's housed. Can you tell us where you, what your thoughts are on that?
Yeah, as I mentioned, it is important to be independent and to coordinate closely with the Archives Division, and we're looking forward to working with the governor's office on fine-tuning the specific details.
But working with the your department, the Department of Secretary of State, one of the areas in the Secretary of State's office, right?
I think that's as currently drafted, it's in the Department of Administrative Services, and we're that's something that I think is a point of discussion that we're excited to work with the governor's office on.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Hass.
Thank you. There is a distinction, though, between ombudsman and advocate. An ombudsman sort of goes after complaints or investigates complaints, whereas an advocate recommends and helps, recommends policy or supports citizens. And that's kind of an important distinction.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, thank you for the question. I think based on the roles, it is more of an advocate position.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I guess I'm going to push back, because if you're talking about someone that's just going to, as Senator Hass says, recommend to an agency they follow the law or provide these documents or whatever it is, as compared to someone that's going to be the pit bull that's going to drive this, I mean, to me there's a little distinction there. And the reason I asked the question about where this office is going to be, I guess I want to know who's writing their check, who has control over what they say or do, and are they going to be under some political pressure, wherever that might be, from the governor's office, from the Secretary of State, I'm just thinking out loud here, that's going to be saying, well, you know, maybe we don't really want to push this one, or we recommend that the advocate doesn't do this. So to me, if we're really looking at putting something there in place, there does seem like we need to have this independence. I understand, in this climate right now, do we have the money to actually establish an office that would be a independent standalone office? Well, I guess that's a question of priority, and that's something that maybe Ways and Means needs to be looking at. But I agree with Senator Hass. We need to figure out what this person really is going to be doing, what their charge is, and if they're really there to help the public get access to information. It seems to me, under the definition that Senator Hass has given us, we may want to come up with a new pronounceable name, or we may want to go with the big O.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we're going to do the second panel now. Jeb Bledin, Rob Bravett, and Scott Winkles.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Senator DeBeer, members of the committee, especially Senator Thatcher from REM Hill County. My name is Jeb Bledin from McMinnville. I'm a ONPA representative on the AG task force, but I'm not representing either ONPA or the task force. I just have had a lot of experience in talking to all parties about this bill over the last year and a half. So just a couple of thoughts related to that and to your discussion. The discussion of an ombudsman came out of a governor's audit more than a year and a half ago or some such, and there was discussion about it at state government. It then flowed over into discussion with the Attorney General's task force for a number of months in 2016, and at a point in time it was decided that the governor's office would craft the draft bill. At that point, the task force essentially stopped talking about it formally as a public records task force. I spoke with the governor's office during that time about ONPA interests in this office, and then a couple of things happened towards the end of the year. Timing became difficult on the draft. The weather blew out an important meeting that would have gathered a lot of discussion between the task force and the governor's office late in the year, and this bill got subjected to a flurry of politics around the state in the media and elsewhere, which easily might not have happened. I think in general, my comment is that from the newspaper people and from the task force people that I've dealt with over the past year, most people have generally favored a strong, independent ombudsman or records advocate position, but nobody was really sure that the legislature would fund something at that level, and the draft bill has something less than that. I know that people believe that something might be better than nothing, and that from my personal perspective, I would say that you can have lots of politics over where this might be placed and where it might be housed, but having dealt with these records issues for decades, I believe that a professional attorney overseeing the public records law is going to go down the line of that public records law, and should they be pushed off of that for political purposes, it's going to be wide open and visible, and it could be fairly difficult to do. It wouldn't be hidden, but at any rate, that's just my little background thoughts about this process over the last year and a half.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities. I have been the League's public records and open meetings lobbyist since 2007, six actually, and I would like to say that this is probably this is without a doubt the most collaborative and holistic approach we've taken at public records reform. And on behalf of the League, I think we thank the Attorney General and the other participants of the Commission for that happening. It's been horribly contentious in the past, and that wasn't the experience we had this time, and for that we are grateful. The League of Oregon Cities is supportive of allowing cities to make access of an advocate or an ombuds. I had suggested ombuds for gender neutrality and pronounceability, but position. We had in one of the meetings of the Attorney General's task force, we brought in some city recorders to talk about their experience with public records requests, and brought in some of the more complicated requests, land use decisions, things that involve accessing IP permission for map reproductions, special print jobs, these sorts of things, and sort of talked about the challenges. But one of the things the city recorders in the meeting really lit up on was the idea that we could have a third party where a city, where an agency that's received a request or a requester could go and sort of have a third party say, work out the details of a request. So a city typically gets a request for, I heard one today, city got a request for all emails between the city and a specific neighborhood. And that's a difficult request to fulfill. And so if we have this ability to go to a third party to work with the requester and the agency and mediate, I think it saves money and time for both the city and the requester, and it makes for a much smoother process. Additionally, in Senate Bill 106, we believe that the creation of the commission in the bill, some further attention. I think cities and local governments would like some representation on this commission, along with some clarification as to its role and how it would interact with the governor's or with the Attorney General's panel. And finally, on the subject of independence, I think we're looking at I understand the need to have an independent role for this agency, for this ombuds, advocate, whatever we wish to call the position. But the League's experience with some of the other independent commissions where there hasn't been accountability for for those agencies, where the executive director is answerable to a commission and not to an executive branch elected official, has been problematic in the past. And so finding that medium to give this person, this ombuds, this advocate, the ability to make decisions that everybody has confidence in, but retaining that accountability, I think, will be important. And with that, I will turn it over to my colleague, barring questions.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Ovette, legal counsel for the Association of Oregon Counties. I've been involved in the Oregon public records law as a county attorney for the last 25 years. I've handled all of the public records appeal petitions for the Lincoln County District Attorney's Office during that entire time. So I have a bit of experience with the Oregon public records law. First, I guess I'd just say ditto to everything you've heard. And then I'll just add this. My client, the Association of Oregon Counties, has not addressed this bill specifically, or Senate Bill 41, which you haven't heard about yet. That's the Attorney General's bill, which is under the jurisdiction of this committee. I suspect you'll be hearing that as well. So I think those are probably your two primary vehicles for consideration at some point. I did send my committee essentially 8 pages of proposed amendments to both bills, including all kinds of policy options and choices. So I've done a little bit of work on this. I did, as a courtesy, provide that to the committee, and it's posted on OLIS, so you can see the kind of policy decision points that our committee is going to be looking at, including the one that Scott referenced, whether or not advocate, and I prefer ombudsperson, that's my preference, whether the ombudsperson should kind of start out dealing with just state agencies, or should we make it broad spectrum right from the get-go. Obviously, the fiscal impact will change depending on that decision point. Another decision point I'll just highlight for you is in relation to the Advisory Council. Will it replace the AG's task force? Should it be permanent? Should it be sunsetted after a few years? I think these are policy points that you ought to consider. There have also been a couple of technical issues that have come up in case law since the legislature last met related to the public records law that probably ought to be fixed in one of these vehicles, and I'm presenting my client with those decisions next Monday as well. So with that, I look forward to working with whatever work group gets formed by the governor's office to kind of work through some of these issues. I think both bills have some good concepts but need a lot of work.
Questions?
I just have one question.
Senator Thatcher.
I'm trying to figure out what OMP stands for.
Oregon Newspaper Publishers.
Thank you. It's O-N-P. See, I heard an M, and so I was trying to figure out what the heck. All right, thank you.
That was an easy one.
Yeah, it was really easy. Right. See?
Thank you, gentlemen. So I have a few more people that wanted to speak on this. I'm just going to go in order that they signed up. And go with Les, and starts with a Z.
It ends with one.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Les Zeitz. I am the owner and publisher of the Malheur Enterprise, the weekly newspaper serving mighty Malheur County. I'm appearing before you this afternoon on behalf of the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. A little background, I've been involved with public records as a journalist in Oregon for over 40 years at all levels, from city to county to state agencies. I served on the Public Records Task Force with Phil Kiesling. I've been served for a time on the Attorney General's recent task force. The major problem that this proposal will solve is the misunderstandings that permeate a lot of the dealings with public records. Public agencies and the press itself often can misunderstand the law. As you'll hear later on, the law is littered with over 400 different exemptions, and developing any expertise, if you're a city clerk or a county assessor, in all the variations of that law are a challenge at best. And for reporters who have to try and seek those public records for public disclosure, trying to work their way through that Swiss cheese of law is a challenge as well. What the public records advocate will do in the view of the ONPA is it will provide an informal and at a better cost way to resolve many of the public records disputes that lead to challenges and contentions throughout the state. A public records advocate, as you heard, can help public agencies understand their obligation, can serve as a middle person to help discuss who needs what and what the obstacles to disclosure are. This could, if properly done, save public agencies a great deal of money across the state, because very often the reaction for local governments and even state agencies is when a request for records comes in, the first phone call is to a lawyer. And you know, the minute you call a lawyer, the meter starts running. And I don't know that anyone's ever cataloged what that has cost Oregon taxpayers to just try and navigate the duties and responsibilities of the public records law. But this advocate could dramatically cut that cost, in my view, again, based on 40 years of experience, that very often disputes over public records are not policy issues. It's understanding the minutia of a law. What does it really mean, and what does it really intend? And when both government officials and the media can have a better understanding of the law, have someone help navigate that law, the need for calling lawyers drops away considerably. We support this concept with a few suggested general improvements. Number one, as you've heard before prior witnesses, we too support making this position as independent as possible, that we inoculate the public records advocate from politics, that the public records advocate not be subordinate to any political figure that can in any way influence the decisions and the performance of that advocate. The law ought to be broadened, the legislation ought to be broadened to provide access to the public advocate by all levels of government. And there are limitations in this bill that would carve out certain counties, and we believe that the advocate ought to be available to all city, county, local governments, as well as state agencies. We do not support and do not advocate that this position is in any way a step away from the process we currently live under, in which district attorneys or the attorney general have the legal obligation to mediate and to rule on public records issues through petitions. This would, in essence, be a step to help mediate before we move into more costly litigation and court costs. Under the current law, the question is also open about whether interveners, third parties, can step into the public records process. So if a reporter asks a government agency for a record concerning a particular association, does that association have a legal right to weigh in and speak up about whether those records should be disclosed or not? That is the current construct and the current interpretation of the law in Oregon, and if that's going to remain the case, then in this process, interveners ought to be accounted for as we set up this process. The bottom line, this streamlines the process, will remove a great number of the conflicts, would remove the tensions, and more important than anything, particularly in today's environment, this legislation is a big step to restoring confidence and trust in government. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Senator Hess.
Thank you. I sort of feel the need, if you'll forgive me, Mr. Chair, of acknowledging that Les Seitz has been one of the longtime indisputed kings of investigative reporting in this state for the Oregonian for many, many years, and has won numerous awards and prestigious awards and uncovered lots of news. And it was just about a year ago where he was becoming a very prominent reporter in that sad episode in Mauhere County. And I just wanted to make sure that everybody knows we're getting some testimony here from one of the acknowledged statewide treasures and resources on the issue of public records. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator House, thank you. And if you want to keep going, I'll listen.
Yeah, I know. I did that just the way you wrote it, too. You refer to reporters and stuff, and you know better than anybody else, we're going into a different time when the downward spiral economically of the news business and fewer reporters, and then to replace that void is, you know, people that I would say are not reporters, but they're bloggers or they're people who disagree with us on an issue. What should there be a different standard if someone who disagrees with me on gun control calls up and says, okay, I want the last 3 years of your email records, versus someone from the Oregonian who makes the same request? And how do we handle that? Because that's opening a huge door there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Haas, the task force tackled that issue of what I consider complex or challenging requests. And I believe that legislation, I haven't seen Senate Bill 41, but I believe that legislation will attempt to get at that issue. Look, the basic premise of the public records law is that anybody, regardless of who they are or who they represent, they have a right to public information held by government. The motivations behind what they seek or the scope of what they seek should play no factor in whether a government agency decides that the information it holds belongs in public hands. Now, the question you raise of how to get at folks who have motivations, you know, that is a process, I believe. And what I've seen agencies, the way they've responded to those sorts of situations, there are any number of ways to apply the exemptions very vigorously or charging, you know, pretty considerable fees. But as a matter of policy, I think it would not be a prudent move to step back at all from that fundamental commitment to open, accountable government.
Senator Brzezinski.
So let's walking through this as we have it today, depending on what level of government the request is being made, there's someone that makes that decision. I know the district attorney's office does a lot of those requests or reviews. So under this configuration, I think what I heard you say is that we leave all that in place, we allow that to work, and if it's not working, or let's say someone wants to challenge what the DA says, they currently go to circuit court to do so. So I guess I can see the potential if we said now we have a one-stop-all place that anyone and everyone in the state can go to for any level of request, then we maybe have a need to have a very large bureaucratic office to be able to handle all those requests and demands. So kind of walk us through how you perceive this office would work in conjunction with those that exist today.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the primary value, and I'll speak for myself now, the primary value of this, again, is at the informal early stages once a request is made, before we ever get to the position of having to file a petition with the district attorney for local governments or with the attorney general for state agencies, that if you can screen out 70% of those potential legal disputes at the informal work of the advocate slash ombudsman slash, you know, poobah, that's going to free up the system, and the system is going to function much more smoothly. I'm not sure I'm addressing your question, but I see that initial step by the public advocate, both providing guidance to citizens and to the press and to public agencies, will screen out much of the controversy. The construct of let's say the district attorney of Lincoln County decides against ordering a disclosure of a record. The mechanics of how you would then go to the public advocate as an intermediary before legal structure seems to me to be, again, more of a mediation service than anything at that stage to say, okay, is there a way to resolve this short of standing before a judge? I don't know if that helps at all, but.
Yeah, I understand this has been something. I'm just trying to figure out if we don't want to overtax, I would assume, this new office with any and every request that could come in across the state. And I see where the protocol, and it does seem appropriate that we have it in place. It seems like when someone makes a request and they are not getting the request granted is where maybe the office would be able to step in, but at the same time, I see your point that if you had someone that really didn't know how to do it, and they went there and said, hey, this is what I'm trying to find, and they gave them a form or whatever, and that would make it expedited, I could see where that could be a benefit as well.
Mr. Chair, Senator, if I may respond to that, I think what I would anticipate is that you would have a curve of caseloads for an advocate where once you create the position, fund the position, the position is in place, that you would have quite a caseload. But then as we sorted out the issues, are building permits public or not, and under what circumstances, that there becomes a, just as there are now with Attorney General's public records orders, they create precedent, court rulings create precedent, the negotiated agreements with the public advocate would create precedent. So you have one contentious case involving building permits. Well, the next six times someone raises that issue, there's already a ready answer to either provide guidance to the government agency or to the citizen. And I think over time, because most public records requests in my experience, are relatively simple. The complex ones are the exception. And this would greatly diminish the stress and strain on local governments and state agencies that they have this resource to quickly get an answer without having to incur the cost of a lawyer, and then that answer stands.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm going to next call up Kevin Neely, and then after that, Jesse O'Brien.
Good afternoon, Chair Riley, members of the committee. My name is Kevin Neely, and I represent the Oregon District Attorneys Association, who were just part of that last piece of discussion. And really, I don't want to repeat what all of the folks before you have said, but I do want to highlight one piece of this concept that does exclude the district attorneys from that role of being the petition reviewer in counties that have a population of 75,000 or less. The DAs have not taken a position on that. I can tell you that many of them have a much higher volume of work than they've had in the past, as have most agencies and public bodies. These public records requests are more frequent. I can tell you that one of the challenges that is faced by the district attorneys in the review of these petitions is, unlike at the state level, where the AG's office completes the petitions, has opinions that can be quickly reviewed and standardized amongst agencies, every county handles these cases differently. So a petition in Union County might be handled completely differently than a petition in Lincoln County. And so for that reason, the underlying core of this bill, the ombuds person slash advocate slash grand poobah, really that could be that, play that role of collecting all of the information. What's the state saying about handling public records, and what are the counties saying about handling public records? Consolidating that into one viewpoint. Because again, right now, if you're a local body, there could be 36 different interpretations on what might happen in the case of a petition. So there is some real value to what they're talking about here again. And I would also add that the DAs are looking forward to continuing to discuss this with the governor's office to see what the scope of our involvement may be. If there may not, it may be that if there's no value in having DAs involved for those counties that are under 75,000, we need to talk about the role of the larger counties and how that might play into public records law. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I have nothing else to add.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And then after this, Jeff Merrick.
Good afternoon, Chair Riley and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jesse O'Brien. I'm the policy director for OSPIRG, which is the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. And I'll be very brief because I feel like the case for this bill has already been made quite articulately and compellingly. But OSPIRG is in support of this bill, and we have been serving on the Attorney General's Public Records Task Force for some time now, and I just wanted to get our support on the record. I do think there are a couple of areas where the legislation can be improved, some of which have already been identified, but I wanted to quickly flag a couple of additional issues that are of interest to us. One of which is relatively minor, which is the makeup of the advisory committee laid out in the legislation. There's only one position open for a member of the public who isn't a member of the news media, and we think that it might be worth expanding that to two or more, because there are a variety of public entities, including advocacy groups like my own, that have a stake in public records requests, and I think there's some value to having advocacy groups at the table as well as members of the lay public, and you can't really do that if there's only one member of the public on the advisory council, but I think that detail can be worked out. Secondly, an issue that came up in the Attorney General's Public Records Task Force that I wanted to at least give voice to before this committee was the idea of assigning responsibility for a similar advocacy or ombuds role over public meetings law to the same individual, because there are many of the same issues and questions and tensions that come up with regard to public meetings law. And it may be that that's too much to take on all at once, it's better to start somewhere, but I wanted to flag that as a possibility for the future. If not for this law, then possibly once this program is up and underway. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you, Jesse.
Senator Riley, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Merrick. I've been an attorney in Oregon since 1984, mediator since 2012. And Senator Brzezinski, my wife was under your tutelage as the International Client Counseling Champion way back when. And I've been on all sides of this public records issue for the last 32 and a half years. My first year was with the AG's office. I dealt with requests from the Rajneeshis. As a civil litigator, I've been getting records from my clients for years. And as a citizen, I go now and then and ask for records. And my experience jives exactly with Mr. Zeitz there, which is, just had one with the city of Portland last year where we were going back and forth for a month with letters and requests, and we just weren't connecting. And I just begged. I begged for a phone call with these lawyers. I said, just call us, talk about this. 10 minutes, we were done. I understood where they were coming from. They understood where I was coming from. We got it done. Probably cost the city at least 6 hours of lawyer time to deal with me when it could have taken 10 minutes with an advocate or a mediator. That's the benefit. That's your best bang for the buck, in my opinion, to get that role, get it done, and get it done right. And I think to get it done right is where I've got some issues with this law. And I've got some testimony. I wrote it out. This got most of my opinions in a little more detail. But first thing is get it done earlier. Right now, you're waiting for denials. You're waiting 21 days. There's only three options when somebody requests records. The records are either already online and you can get them. It's a routine request and that's not a problem. Or the problem is the so-called complex requests. I say in the initial acknowledgement, get out there and say, we think this is going to be a problem request because, and say the reasons. Because when you say any and all records on this topic, we've got to look back 50 years and it's going to cost us, you know, $50,000. And then at that point, don't wait for denial. Don't wait for a problem. At that point, when you get the initial response back that says, we think there's a problem, the agency says, deal with it then. Get in the mediator, get it done, and work it out if you can. And some people, you're not going to be able to work it out. And that's why you still need all the decision makers along the line, the AGs and the district attorneys. So that part, I think, is great. I think as a mediator, the way you've structured it, or the way this law is structured, undercuts the integrity of the mediation process. It undercuts it by making the mediator the decider of many things. And if the mediator is responding time after time that, for example, you know, Representative Haas shouldn't have to give 3 years of his records, and they do that a few times, they're going to lose their credibility. If the mediator is ruling for or against the agency a number of times, people are going to start saying, I don't know if we can trust this guy, as compared with a true mediator role where you try to convince people. Instead of saying, you know, in the civil litigation, instead of a judge saying as a mediator, I think you're going to lose your case, you go instead, you say, you know, I hear you. I see your frustration. But if you don't agree to this, how do you think a judge is going to deal with this issue? You say the City of Independence is being irresponsible by not responding sooner. Do you think a judge is going to require the clerk to come back from bereavement leave? You know, instead of, there's mediators who have skills can kind of work through these issues that can be worked through. And sometimes you can't. Sometimes people are just unreasonable. You need decision makers. And that actually helps the mediators because the mediators can then say, you know, if you feel like it's a waste of time talking with me, go to court. If you think you can get some benefit talking with me, let's talk. So I think that's an important role, is get it sooner and get and make it voluntary. So that's the biggest thing there, is get it sooner and make it voluntary. This idea of taking over the district attorney's jobs in the smaller counties, I think you need to think long and hard about that. Maybe some DAs want to keep that job. Maybe the people in Sherman County would rather listen to their DA than to some public records advocate in Salem or Portland. And again, it kind of undercuts the role of we don't even use the word neutral anymore. We call it pro-partial is the new buzzword. We're for both sides. And so I think if the mediator is making these rulings as a DA in a small county, then all of a sudden, you know, is this person really on one side or the other if they rule against the person now and then? I think the key with your budget situation is to keep the footprint as small as possible. How are you going to get the best thing done possible, the most bang for your buck? And if the job's already being done by the DA, leave it there. You don't have to create a new job for a new person. I think your best bang for the buck, just I agree with Mr. Zeitz, is get a mediation person in there, get the function up front as soon as possible. Early discussion resolution is the other buzzword, especially in the medical malpractice context. So with that, I mean, I've got a ton of ideas on these laws, and I've shared some with some of you. But for today, I'll leave it at that and just say focus on the one unmet need, which is get a skilled, knowledgeable, ethical facilitator. That'll help citizens and public servants speed the process of public access, save money because you're not wasting time up front figuring out what's really being asked for, and then that'll help restore the understanding and public trust that everybody's suffering from.
Questions?
No, but I liked his term, facilitator. That's the best one yet, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way I see you get your best role in. And if all of a sudden the facilitator is not a facilitator but saying, you're acting in bad faith, you know, you undercut that role, in my view. Thank you.
Phil Lemon. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Phil Lemon from the Oregon Judicial Department, your state courts. If I understood Mr. Merrick correctly, we are pro-partial on this bill. We don't have a position on the bill or the name of the office, and we joined the chorus of people who are working with the governor's office to try to clarify and iron out some wrinkles. I want to leave you with a couple quick thoughts. One is, I think this bill would benefit from some more clear and consistent standards and timelines. If the intention is to have this mediation occur before a petition goes to the DA or an attorney general, then that should say so, and then make sure that the timelines for ruling on petitions, for filing lawsuits, are consistent with that intention. For standards, the bill allows a requester to ask for mediation if the requester has asserted that the fee waiver reduction is, quote, in the public interest. But the records custodian, when they make that determination, is authorized to grant a fee waiver or reduction if it is in the public interest because making the record available primarily benefits the general public. And so those two tracks and those considerations we think ought to be aligned, so we're talking about apples to apples when we go through this process. Secondly, is kind of a branch issue. The advocate would provide training on records management or retention. By statute, the state court administrator has a separate retention schedule for the judicial branch that does not apply to the executive branch or the legislative branch. So if that training is voluntary, or we want to make sure that that advocate has experience in court records management, court records retention, it is a very complex and different animal than a lot of different executive branch agencies, so we'd like that to be considered. The last point is, under current law, excuse me, if an elected official denies disclosure, there is no avenue for a petition to the DA or the Attorney General to go straight to litigation. And so we would want it clearly spelled out if that exemption still applies or if an elected official denial goes to mediation. For our branch of government, it might happen in the context of a case. If a judge seals a portion of a an adoption case record and that person wants that record and goes the public records route, then are we going to have a circuit court judge mediating with someone requesting that adoption case record, or how would that exactly work? So those are the three kind of general areas that we'll be working with the governor's office on. I'd be glad to take your questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So that's everyone we have on the list. Is there anybody else who wants to talk about this subject right now? So this is not done, obviously. So my advice, if you're interested in this, is watch this space. I'm going to close this public hearing, and we're going to move on. We got a couple of fingerprinting bills. So I'm going to start with Senate Bill 12, and I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 12 and call up Ramona Rodmaker. Would you give us a little, while she's coming up, would you give us a little
Mr. Chair, summary? Members of the committee, Senate Bill 12 authorizes the Oregon Business Development Department to require fingerprints in order to run nationwide criminal records check from applicants, employees, contractors, vendors, interns, and volunteers working in information technology, financial transactions or accounting, mailroom personnel, auditing personnel, and those with access to personal identifying information, financial information, or information required by law to be kept confidential. There's no subsequent referral, a minimal fiscal impact, and no revenue impact.
Welcome.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Ramona Rodmaker. I'm the Assistant Director for Operations and Finance for the Oregon Business Development Department, or Business Oregon. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 12, which would enable our agency to enter into interagency agreement with the Oregon State Police and the FBI in order to conduct national fingerprint-based criminal record checks for our job applicants and service providers that are working with our agency. Currently, we don't possess this authority in order to do the national background checks. Through an executive order, we have the ability to only do state background checks through the law enforcement data system. That only tells us when somebody has either committed a crime or been prosecuted in the state of Oregon. According to the state police identification unit, it's required for us to have statutory authority within the statutes that affect our department in order for us to enter into an interagency agreement with the FBI in order to get this national background check done. Senate Bill 12 really gives Business Oregon the same level of statutory authority that other state agencies already possess, and it would help to reduce liability to the and risk to the agency. Basically, we would be using it if we had a job candidate or a volunteer or intern or somebody who had not lived within the state of Oregon for the last 5 years, so that we could find out if there were any felony convictions or other areas of concern in that person's background when we're doing national recruitments. The background checks would be limited to applicants who have access to tax and financial information about individuals and businesses, confidential information such as credit card information, social security number, driver's licenses, things like that, cash, property, and other negotiable instruments, human resources, and our information technology system, which obviously provides access to all of those other things. This could potentially improve workplace safety as well as loss due to financial crimes. And also it could help to reduce our legal and administrative costs by helping to inform our hiring decisions. So for these reasons, Business Oregon urges you to support Senate Bill 12, and it should help to reduce agency liability and protect the public interest.
Questions? So I'm going to close this public hearing. Thank you very much. Close this public hearing. And I'm going to hold this for another session to do a public, a work session, but I'm going to move on to Senate Bill 86, And actually, we have no witnesses. Oh, we okay. So I'm going to open public hearing on Senate Bill 86. And anyone who would like to speak about it, come on up.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. Chair Riley, for the record, my name is Lindsay Baker, and I am the Government Relations Director at the Department of Administrative Services. With me is Wendy Heckman. She is one of our senior HR consultants in the Chief Human Resources Office within our agency, and we are going to talk a little bit about Senate Bill 86 today. So currently, under current Oregon statute, every agency is authorized explicitly to perform employment-related background checks for potential employees of their agency. DAS, as a sort of central human resources agency, has a lot of service contracts with often smaller boards, smaller agencies, boards, and commissions. However, because the statute is written such that we are authorized only to conduct checks for our potential employees, we do not have that same authority to do background checks on behalf of other agencies. So this bill allows us to conduct employment-related background checks for on behalf of other agencies with whom we have an HR service contract. And that is all the bill does, and we are here for questions if you have any.
I don't see any questions at all. Anybody else want to talk about this?
Real quick.
Yes,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Przanski.
So, Lindsay, whose service are we're providing the service to who then?
To other state agencies. So oftentimes for larger agencies, they have their dedicated in-house HR. So these would be for the smaller agencies, boards, and commissions that oftentimes don't have their dedicated HR function. So they execute service contracts with us. So we perform all of those services.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
I'm going to close this public hearing, and I'm also going to hold this over for a work session later. So, anything else for the good of the order? I think we're through. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
It's adjourned.
Thank you.
I think we're through. This meeting is